Hey, everyone. Thank you, Serena, and thank you for all the work you're doing. Yeah, we were caught a little bit by surprise in terms of this transition, and that's how progress is made. Tequanimity, it's not a real word yet, but it's not a bad word to keep in mind since we find tech almost unavoidably part of our lives. For good and for bad. Part of the good is being able to gather like this, of course. So welcome. If you're new to meditation, I'm hoping to give some good guidance about how to meditate. There are dozens of ways to approach meditation. Last Saturday, I was on a panel with some young activists where they'd invited some meditation people. And, you know, I did it with some trepidation because normally I'm the professor, I'm in charge, and so forth. And I'm not going to mention names, but it was a great experience. I could mention names. It's not because it was bad. It was just very fun to be teaching with people with an orientation to meditation, one of whom, you know, does quite a lot of what would fall under New Age types of modalities. And it was really enjoyable to compare notes and talk openly. So our expertise at MARC is the basics of mindfulness. And we use our ability to direct our attention. We really don't get fancy here conceptually. And even so far as to say that the challenge for most of us, especially someone who knows how to turn on a computer and navigate the internet, all of you, yes, unless your grandmother did it for you, you're all welcome here. Scratch all that. For people used to thinking, the challenge can be letting it be this simple, letting it be simple. And so we don't use so much of the amazing power of our minds, you know, in meditation. And at the same time, we don't have to get rid of it. We don't have to turn it off. We use it. So it's quite interesting. So we use our ability to direct our attention on sounds, on sensations in our bodies, the feel of the breath, and this activity, focusing, sustaining attention with something relatively neutral, meaning not painful, has really good effects for us as humans. You know, whatever else is going on for us, and it is doable. It's something we can do. So I'll try to guide you. And even as I guide you, you know, we have to use our own judgment, our own intuition. So don't feel like if only you were understanding better, you could do it. No, it's just finding your own balance with effort and so forth. But as I will even emphasize, in the midst of things, it is doable and so forth. That being said, we all almost certainly will find that during certain moments, our minds are drifting, we're sort of lost, we're daydreaming, we're freaked out, and so forth. And this is normal. It's our intelligence in play. It's this great capacity we have, the way our brains and nervous system work, to keep track of what needs to be kept track of, or just to get pulled away. And so when we notice that's happening, we simply include it, meaning we're aware this is what's happening with thoughts. If thoughts are racing, we don't try to race with them or keep up. Just notice the mind is very active. Find some connection with our bodies, with emotions, that emphasis on the sensations we can tune into. And that can take some practice, but it's doable. When I recognize I'm anxious, there usually are thoughts. We don't have to squelch the thoughts, but we can shift attention into our bodies, notice the visceral, palpable sensations, then come back to even more neutral sensations of the breath and so forth. So let's go ahead. Eyes can be open or closed. Mostly we'll find it easier with eyes closed, but you can have your eyes open if you wish. And we can do this in any posture, standing, sitting, lying down. Might take a few deeper breaths, slightly deeper in breath and out breath, a few of these, even a sigh with the out breath. Just one way to begin. Letting your breath be normal. We'll come back to the breath in a minute, the normal breath. For now, just notice the sounds that you can hear. And this is a point where we can notice how easy this is, and that we don't have to censor any sounds or micromanage what we hear, just receptive, kind of focusing attention on this part of our experience in the midst of everything else that may be happening. Noticing some of the sounds, moment by moment. So we're not organizing this. It's not like we have to turn it into a composition, just tuning in when some of the sounds happening moment after moment. So it's a mental activity, focusing, sustaining attention. We're not trying to get something out of the sounds. They're just useful phenomena coming and going for our purposes. And stay with sounds. Come back to sounds whenever you wish. It's a fine way to meditate. It's also good to practice with our bodies in much the same way. So when you wish, letting your attention settle into your body. Same receptive orientation, just noticing what there is to notice in your head and shoulders and arms and hands, torso, legs, feet. Vibration, pressure, softness, so forth. Again, it's not a real goal-oriented activity. This is where the patience comes in. We're not trying to micromanage the experience. It is a definite action of mind, though, just that directing attention in a receptive way in the midst of everything else we could be doing. And so forth. So we tune into the feel of our bodies. It can be natural to notice sensations connected with the normal breath. So as the in-breath begins, typically some sensations in the abdomen, the chest, or the nose, by virtue of which we know the in-breath is beginning. So here again, no need to overdo it. Just letting attention rest somewhere, knowing some of the sensations. Knowing when the in-breath begins because of what we feel in the abdomen, chest, or nose. So it's an interesting combination of doing something, but also just being receptive. The doing is mostly patience. The reason for this activity is focusing, sustaining attention with something relatively neutral. Our minds naturally become calmer and more clear, more concentrated. We don't have to try to make that happen. It happens naturally. So this is doable, and it can take some practice, but we don't have to wait till later. Right now, it's just some sensations is good enough. Knowing when the in-breath begins, how breath begins. For any breath reason, the breath doesn't feel quite right. Just somewhere else, sensations in your hands or feet, maybe back to sounds. But no need to try to get it perfect. And though, even though this is quite doable, nonetheless, we will not do it perfectly. And as noted earlier, at some point, we will realize our minds have, you know, so quickly been drawn into some normal habits of mulling something over or planning, or maybe something new, something random, a memory or something has pulled our attention. So yeah, our minds are interesting. So lots of things can happen, and it might be pleasant, it might not be. Whatever it is, we recognize it, we include it, that awareness, but not a lot of a big job here. So recognition, thinking, planning, worrying, maybe emotion, recognition, anxiety, grief, joy, whatever. Feeling our bodies and then reconnecting when we can to wherever we were trying to focus, letting attention rest again, the breath, somewhere else. So take a few more minutes for the meditation together. No need to evaluate all that much. We can learn, you know, but we don't have to kind of figure it all out. That being said, there can be a place for just noticing whether we might increase effort a little bit or let up a little bit. So if you feel like you're kind of working hard, maybe even increasing tension a bit by your effort for these last few minutes, maybe just backing off a little. So still stay with it, but not try so hard, for instance, to notice exactly when the in-breath begins. So kind of tune into that permission here where we're really just receptive. Still staying attuned. On the other hand, if you're kind of sleepy or kind of the mind's just been drifting, you can ratchet up the effort a little. Just like, okay, exactly when does the in-breath begin? So ratchet it up just a bit, see what happens. Yeah, so thank you. It's good to meditate with you. After 40 some years now, this still remains interesting to me. Even such simple things as how much effort to make, you know, and I do feel it's personal. We're not, by definition, this activity is personal, and there is a method that I have a lot of confidence in, that it can be practiced, that it has good effects. But in the actual moment-to-moment practice, you know, we use our own wisdom, we use our own judgment and intuition. And so there are ways of exploring that, and it can remain interesting. And we do not need to have some kind of model that we're getting exactly right, I feel. This idea of cultivating concentration, clarity, calmness, there are indeed many ways to do it. And this is where you get differing types of meditation. And so the breath is widely used, where from a mindfulness perspective and from a cultivation of concentration perspective, it's mainly just a handy set of sensations moment by moment, right, that are tend to be available, and there's some change, you know, so that it can help keep the interest, you know, where is, what is happening, right? But there are many other ways this can be done. And I have a pretty open mind about it. That was what was fun about Saturday, you know, just comparing notes and with some, you know, people teaching meditation in ways very different from how we approach it. And then afterwards, just hanging around, talk to this girl. It's mostly young people, activists. And I was just like, well, how did it go? And she's like, well, you know, I sort of have my own way. I was like, okay, what you want to tell me? And she goes, oh yeah, I pray. You know, I pray. I was like, oh, we should have mentioned that, right? It should have been mentioned, right? There, you know, religious forms, practices, prayer can work, in my opinion, in much the same way. And yeah, once I start talking about this, I get a little bit different from how I teach, because I value teaching in a super clear way, not cluttering with a lot of conceptual issues and so forth, and certainly not talking about drugs. But we're talking about young people, and it was an open forum, and so naturally psychedelics is going to come up. And I know no one here asked. But if asked, I have plenty to say. And one thing I have to say is, yeah, back when before I started to meditate, when I was a philosophy grad student, I certainly explored some psychedelics. And one of the, not certainly, but I did. And, you know, one of my motivators for looking into meditation was, wow, I wonder if there are anything in the meditation traditions which can cultivate, you know, similar states, but that are stable and integratable, more integratable into an ordinary life and so forth. And the answer was, in my judgment, yes. But that was where I was in the 80s doing long intensive retreats, you know, silent retreats. And so this activity that we begin with, that can be done, I feel just the children can do it, even with a few minutes instruction, can also, and I hope all of you had a taste of it, but even if you didn't today, I'm sure you can. This actually can be done in ways that can seem utterly ridiculous and probably would be not quite doable for many people, but taking a weekend or a week or 10 days or even months, which I myself have done, to explore it. And indeed exploring it, you know, in a silent types of retreats using basically the same method that I teach now. And yeah, this is something that hasn't been researched. The mindfulness is being researched in many, many different ways, as you probably know, and opening people's minds that, you know, a 6 or 8 week class like our MAPS classes have been studied quite a lot for effects for sleep quality, blood pressure, emotional regulation, and with very good effects. What hasn't been studied much is what happens in the more intensive silent retreat context. And so that's just waiting to be done. And now that, you know, there is serious research in psychedelics, that it's becoming much less taboo and so forth. There's quite a lot to learn. So, yeah, it was, there is a UCLA scientist named Charles Grobe, G-R-O-B, who has continued work on psychedelics for decades. And he's someone who he's given several grand rounds at UCLA during the past few years. And he's an example of someone who is doing serious research with a, you know, in an ethical, and I feel, as far as I know, that way. And it's not a topic I normally bring up, and I probably wouldn't have, except that it was quite a good conversation on Saturday. I definitely do not bring it up in my undergrad classes. However, they bring it up, and then there's an opportunity to talk about it. And it's important to talk about it because for many young people, it is a reality. They're experimenting with these things. And so I think we should stop now. Thank you for your attention. Happy to be in touch. Serena, maybe you could put the email address in the chat since you mentioned that they could contact us. Or I can do it here. Yeah, our website. She was Serena was being gentle on us. It's in shambles right now. but it won't be for long. There we go. Pay attention to Serena's. I don't even know our email address. So scratch mine, use hers. If you do, or if you're looking for something and can't find it. Yeah, so take care. We'll see you.